about to enter another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land of imagination. Next stop, the Twilight Zone.
Dave Plyer in for Steve Cochran this morning. Happy July 4th to all of you. So the legendary TV anthology series, The Twilight Zone, produced and largely written by Rod Serling, turns 60 this year. Today, Decades TV will air the Rod, White, and Blue Twilight Zone Marathon with 42 of the most iconic episodes shown back-to-back, which is an Independence Day weekend tradition. Now, his daughter Anne Serling has chronicled the life of her iconic father years ago in a book called As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling. And Anne joins us this morning. Good morning, Anne. Hard to believe 60 years since the premiere of this legendary series. Pretty amazing.
Good morning, Dave. It's pretty stunning, isn't it? And no one would have been more surprised than my father that people are still talking about it.
I think all the way back then when those shows were produced, nobody really knew, you know, especially in the late 50s, early 60s, what kind of longevity some of these shows would eventually have. And the networks, you know, after only having three, four channels back then, the variety that's out there, that this show is still a standout.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was difficult to even get it going, you know, with the way censors were and sponsors. So it was tricky to talk about relevant issues. It was very difficult to get them aired, and which is why actually my father launched into the Twilight Zone, because he wanted to write some meaningful scripts. And prior to that, he'd written things that, you know, were blue-lined, and it was just very difficult. For instance, he wrote a script about Emmett Till, and it was very, very difficult to talk about, you know, issues that were so relevant.
Yeah.
And he finally wrote a script about Emmett Till that was called A Town Has Turned to Dust, and by the time the censors were done with it, he said his script had turned to dust.
I bet. He battled that all along, didn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah, and then, you know, the sponsors, it was so crazy. He wrote a show where the Chrysler building showed in the skyline, and it had to be blacked out because the sponsors were Ford. You know, so there was all that pressure, too, from sponsors.
He was inspired at a very early age, though, from some of those Pulp Fiction stories that were out there. I mean, that's what kind of got his blood rushing a little bit. You know, those stories from Norman Corwin and Arch Obler, you know, two of the best writers in the industry. And they took some risk, too, on radio. And I think that's what your father really admired.
Yeah, absolutely. He was also a great fan of Poe's and Lovecraft.
Now, right out of high school, he joined the Army, where he served in World War II with awards that included the Purple Heart and the Bronze Star. And out of the war, he studied literature and started right away in radio. While he was at college, he managed the school's radio broadcasting workshop.
He did. Originally, when he got out of the war, he really didn't know what he wanted to do. And he went to Antioch because his brother had gone there, and he was planning to major in physical education because he liked working with kids. But he was so traumatized by the war, as, you know, any vet is, that he turned to language and literature because, as he said, he had to get it off his chest. He had to get it out of his gut. And the writing, you know, proved cathartic. And, you know, he did start at the radio show where he wrote and acted out everything he was writing.
He did everything. It was kind of a great learning curve for him to kind of touch and feel everything that was about radio at the time.
Right. And actually, while he was a student at Antioch and working on in the radio program, he wrote a script for Dr. Christian, and he won second prize. Earl that's where he first crossed paths with Earl Hamner, actually, who I think may have won. And they all met in New York City, where the show had sent them to get their prizes.
Mm-hmm. Well, then he went on to, right after he graduated from college, you know, he started his writing career, but he was at WLW I think it was in Cincinnati. He enjoyed radio, didn't he?
He did, but he got very frustrated because, again, he wanted to write meaningful scripts, you know, not testimonials for patent medicines. And
yeah,
he was also writing documentaries that honored the local towns, which his quote was, they had little to distinguish them except for their antiquity.
But he got some of that out now when he went into television, because he was writing in the 50s, mid-50s, for the Hallmark Hall of Fame, Kraft Theater, Playhouse 90. Those were some great anthology series. I have to imagine that's what kind of kicked things off for him.
But he was, you know, while he was a staff writer for WLW, he was he'd work all day at the studio, and then he'd go home and have a quick dinner and then write and write and write. And it was during that time that he had 40 rejections. In fact, someone even told him he should switch careers because he'd never be a writer.
Oh,
but
man.
But he persevered, and Patterns in 1955 was his first really big hit. And at the time, my parents had a babysitter for my older sister. I wasn't born yet, and they told the babysitter, you know, nobody's going to call, don't worry about it. And he said that the minute the show went off the air, his phone started to ring.
But he certainly started making a name for himself in television and his writing as well.
Absolutely, right. Playhouse 90 and Kraft Theater, and right.
Yeah, so CBS purchased a teleplay in 1958, so this is a little bit before The Twilight Zone began. It's something your father wrote and hoped to produce as a pilot of a weekly series. It was called The Time Element. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, The Time Element was bought by CBS, and CBS shelved it for a year, and then it was brought by, I think his name was Bert Gannett, who worked for Desilu Studios, and because Bert was looking for good shows, and he wanted one of my dad's, and so they aired The Time Element, and I guess at the time it received more mail than any other show that Desilu Productions had aired that year.
Now, I think during this Desilu Playhouse, though, even Desi Arnaz introduced the show. I mean, they were groundbreakers at the time, Desilu Productions. I think people forget it wasn't just I Love Lucy. They had some of the hottest dramas out there, really, in the 50s and the 60s.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Not many people knew that. And even, you know, I didn't even realize that until I was writing my book.
Now, CBS began talks then with your dad about producing The Twilight Zone, which is kind of where things started kicking off. The pilot was called, I think, Where Is Everybody?
Right. Right. He'd written something else that I can't at the moment recall the name of. I think it was called The Happy Place. Mm-hmm. But CBS felt it was too depressing or didn't really fit what they wanted to air. And so then he wrote the other one.
His writing for the series, you know, it was always mysterious. It was always full of drama, sometimes at the edgier seed, sometimes a little horror. But he always splashed in a little bit of humor in there. And really, when you were watching these shows, I think they were very relatable because they always somehow tied into real life and real life situations. And even though it would go off into a completely different turn, that's what made this series so exciting.
I think you're right, and I think, you know, again, he wanted to write meaningful scripts and relevant scripts, and because he'd had so much difficulty before The Twilight Zone, in fact, his quote was that an alien could say what a Democrat or a Republican couldn't. He wrote, like you said, relatable scripts, and, you know, that dealt with social issues and moral issues and you know, important things that are sadly still so relevant today.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
All right, it's Dave Plaren for Steve Cochran here on 720 WGN, and we're talking to Ann Serling, daughter of television legend Rod Serling, on the 60th anniversary of The Twilight Zone. So most shows had scads of writers on staff. Your father wrote most of these episodes himself.
Yeah, there were 156 altogether, of which he wrote 92.
Wow.
And, you know, the other great writers were Earl Hamner and George Clayton Johnson and Matheson and
Ray Bradbury. I mean, the names were incredible.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty seamless team of writers, and they all got along, and
But I think that's what makes the, you know, when people talk about comedy, you know, the writers don't usually get its due. The actors do. When you talk about a classic comedy like a Dick Van Dyke Show or Andy Griffith or an I Love Lucy, you know, everyone talks about Lucy or Dick Van Dyke or Mary Tyler Moore or whatever. But when it comes to drama, And because there wasn't a steady actor in there, except for your father's presence in every show, you know, the writers really get the recognition. And I discovered it. It was airing on WGN in the late 70s, like at 10 o'clock at night. And I was a kid. I mean, I was maybe 10, 11 years old. And I've been hooked ever since. But I mean, everything you see in this series, you know, the acting was great and everything else, but it's really one of the best written shows in television history.
Well, thank you. And again, my father would have been so surprised, you know, that the Writers Guild voted it one of the three top best shows a year ago. He would have just been so honored and humbled by that.
Now, you know, what was the reason during the production, Anne, and I'm sure you've done your research on this, there were some episodes that were done on video instead of film. It's such a difference of quality. And one of them was the Art Carney Night of the Meek, their big Christmas episode. It was done like almost, it was very poor quality. Why did they do it at that point?
Well, apparently, you know, I didn't know this, of course, at the time, but apparently they switched because they for budget reasons, and they wanted to save money. And it was not a good idea by any means.
Yeah, it was six episodes. It was just six episodes for them. It was 22, Static, The Whole Truth, The Lateness of the Hour, The Night of the Meek, and Long Distance Call. And it just always surprised me when I saw those. Now, you said the original series contains 156 episodes. And unlike seasons 1 through 3 and 5, season 4 consisted of one-hour episodes. What kind of propelled your dad to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to do a full hour of this?
Well, I'm not certain that was actually his idea. I don't know, but I think that they, you know, eventually they returned to the 30-minute format because I think they thought that that, you know, that worked better.
Did your dad have any favorite episodes? I mean, I know that's really hard, especially when you're writing almost 100 of them of one of the most iconic television series. But did he have some favorites?
Well, I know that he liked Time Enough at Last and, you know, of course, Walking Distance and Willoughby. My dad said that he had a propensity to deal with sort of nostalgic themes, and certainly Walking Distance and Willoughby, you know, were, I think, two of the best ones as well.
Yeah, so one of my favorites was Willoughby as well, and then, and I just watched it the other day, is To Serve Man, which I thought was one of the creepiest episodes ever.
Right, yeah. Another one he wrote that Death had revisited, about an SS officer who goes back to a concentration camp and gets his due, which I think was an extremely powerful episode.
But there was a ton of guest stars in these shows, too. I mean, people who really just got their television career started made appearances on The Twilight Zone.
Yeah, that's pretty stunning, isn't it? Robert Redford, you know, was one. James Dean, several.
What are your dad's feelings? What were your dad's feelings about Night Gallery? Did he enjoy doing that show as well?
You know, I think initially he had great aspirations for it, but unlike The Twilight Zone, he did not have creative control over Night Gallery, and it turned out to be a tremendous disappointment for him. That said, there were some great episodes. They're Tearing Down Tim Riley's Bar was, I think, a beautiful script and one of my dad's favorites, and one that was nominated for an Emmy as well. Again, dealing with the theme of going back in time.
Yeah, because people view that as just as iconic sometimes as the Twilight Zone. But as you said, you lose that creative control. It doesn't. It's not really yours anymore. Now, you yourself, you're an accomplished poet, a novelist, a short story writer, an author. You know, was it your dad's desire for you to follow in those footsteps? Did he know, when he passed away, you were 20 years old, did he know you were headed in that direction?
Not really. You know, he knew that I was writing. At that time, I was writing poetry, and I would show him my poetry, and if he liked it, I knew immediately, because he'd make a big deal about it.
Yeah.
If he didn't like it, he would declare it interesting.
Got it. As a true parent would. Now, some years ago, you adapted two of your father's Twilight Zone teleplays into short stories, one for The Angels and The Changing of the Guard for Twilight Zone magazine. What inspired you to kind of dive into your dad's work?
Well, you know, I was given the opportunity, and those particular scripts I thought were just such lovely stories. And, of course, my father had done all the hard work. All I had to do was flesh them out. But it was something I really enjoyed doing.
And so growing up with your famous dad, I mean, did most people know you were Rod Serling's daughter? How was that like growing up with a guy that's been in a million homes week after week?
You know, it was very different, Dave, back in those days than it is today. You know, the paparazzi aren't weren't like they are today, where they're in your face and so rude and obnoxious. And my best friend's father was a writer, so you know, that was just our norm.
Well, The Twilight Zone is celebrating its 60th anniversary this year. It's available on Blu-ray, DVD, seen regularly on the Sci-Fi Network, and today in a full-day marathon on the Decades Channel. Ann Serling, thanks for joining us, and enjoy your 4th.
Thank you.